A Touch of Frost, Season 1, Episode 2. David Jason. A Touch of Frost, with narrative description by Audiovision. Based on the novels by R.D. Wingfield. Episode 2, Not With Kindness. Screenplay by Richard House. A hearse cruises along a country road. Produced by Don Lever. Inside the hearse.
So then, number one priority in this game is what?
The undertaker's assistant considers.
Personal hygiene?
Customer relations. And why is that?
I suppose because we have to relate to the customers.
Because we have to relate to the customer when he, she is at his, her most vulnerable, and therefore in need of our greatest tact and consideration. Here we are.
Tossing a cigarette out the window, the undertaker turns into the cobbled courtyard of an elegantly refurbished stone farmhouse, directed by Dave Reynolds. The assistant approaches the front door and rings the bell.
Nobody in.
Stay.
An attractive young woman opens the door in her bathrobe.
Madam?
Yes?
We're here to fulfil the requirements of the deceased.
He consults a form.
Mrs. Alexandra Compton?
With a horrified scream, she slams the door. In a churchyard cemetery, Frost stands beside really a well-groomed woman at a freshly filled grave.
You'd think, you know, sisters, we'd be real close.
She always spoke very fondly of you.
Christmas cards, birthday cards, twice a year on the phone, maybe. Why wasn't I here?
You came as soon as you could.
I should have been here.
Glancing around, Frost notices a woman filling a bucket from a standpipe.
Well, if you're ready.
Okay.
Frost and his sister-in-law make their way through the cemetery.
Have you chosen the headstone yet?
No, not yet, no.
Would you like me to help you?
That would be very nice, Marion. Thank you.
You know, in the States we have the most incredible selection, even for dogs.
Well.
Well, we'll do what we can, sir.
Nearby, a constable follows the church warden past vandalized gravestones.
10 years I've been warden at this church, and every year it gets worse. And you know why, don't you? Because the vicar's got no go in him, and the police force are worse than useless.
Is that an official complaint, sir, or just by way of social chit-chat?
She was so terribly proud of you winning that medal. She sent us all the newspaper cuttings, you know.
No, I didn't know.
The George Cross for bravery. I think the day she went with you to the palace was the happiest day of her life.
Yeah, so do I.
As Marion gets into Frost's car, she feels something on the seat. She pulls it out. An apple core. She considers it with distaste. Then opens the ashtray to dispose of it and finds the tray full of butts and candy wrappers. She pulls it out.
I'll just get rid of these before we go, shall I?
Stepping over to a trash bin, she empties the ashtray into it.
There.
Frost gives her a polite smile, which quickly fades. A cold remedy is mixed by the desk sergeant at the police station. He looks up as Superintendent Mullet enters.
Morning, Sergeant.
Morning, sir.
How do we stand? Any more additions to the sick list?
No, sir. And the replacements have arrived.
Ah, good. Things are looking up.
Two PCs and a detective sergeant.
That's all they can give us.
Oh, afraid so, sir.
Well, we'll just have to make do then, won't we? No news of Chief Inspector Allen, I suppose?
Yes, sir. His wife did phone. He's had a bit of a setback, I'm afraid. Be at least another week.
As soon as you've got a moment, come up and we'll work out a revised duty roster.
Right, sir.
As Mullet strides off, a woman approaches the desk.
Morning.
I'd like to speak to someone about my daughter. She didn't come home last night.
A Porsche sports car roars along a country road. It slows and turns into the courtyard of the refurbished stone farmhouse. Hurrying inside, the driver finds the maid.
Where's my wife?
She's upstairs.
She's all right, is she?
She is now.
Thank you, Mrs. Blakiston. Did she phone the police, do you know?
First thing.
Frost arrives at the station.
You know what gets right up my nose?
Hang on, I've got a list here somewhere.
No, I'll tell you what gets right up my nose, and that is people who go and live in America and after 10 minutes end up talking like Catherine Flippin' Hepburn. What's on? That's what I like about Scotch people, you know, emigrate all over the world for as long as you like, still end up talking like Scotch people, isn't that, Mrs. what?
Mrs. Compton, Banders End Farm. Someone playing silly buggers, living coffins and so on. I said you'd go up and see her.
Oh, Bill, how can I? I've only got 3 men.
4? Your new sidekick's arrived, D.S. Gilmore.
Yeah, but I mean, if it's only people playing silly buggers...
Apparently they're getting less funny all the time. Well, she really does sound like she's had enough. I mean, we're talking hysteria.
Give her a ring and tell her I'll be over there sometime this afternoon.
Oh, Jack. Have a word, will you?
Sergeant Wells indicates the woman in the waiting area.
What's it all about?
Her daughter didn't come home last night.
Can't someone else do it?
Haven't got anyone else. The poor cow's been sitting there for god half an hour.
Frost grimaces, but then escorts the woman into an interview room. He bangs on the radiator.
Can't even offer you a cup of tea, I'm afraid. The canteen's closed.
He sits down across from her.
Right. Well, then, when did you last see her?
Yesterday morning, 7:30, when she left the house to do her paper round. She does a paper round on her bike and then goes straight on to school. Well, when I say I saw her, that's not quite true. I'd already left for work. We've had a lot of people down with this flu, and I said I'd go in early. It was Colin who actually saw her off.
Colin? That's your husband, is it?
Oh, no, I'm divorced. 5 years since. Colin and I, you know, we live together.
Why have you taken so long to come and see us if you haven't seen us since yesterday morning?
We'd had a big row the night before. Somehow it sort of started up again the next morning, just before she went out. She said she wasn't coming back and we'd be sorry.
Could she have gone to her father?
Unlikely. He's in the Middle East.
Have you spoken to her friends?
They haven't seen her. She didn't go to school yesterday and nobody's seen her this morning.
What's it about, this row?
The usual.
What's the usual?
She's never really been very happy about Colin and me.
Right, well, let me take a few details, can I?
He pulls out a used envelope to make notes on.
Right, now then, it's Paula Bartlett, yes? She's what, aged 15? Now, can you give me a description?
Dark hair, shoulder length, brown eyes. About 5'3". A little bit overweight. Not much, just a little bit.
And she was wearing...
Cheryl Bartlett struggles with tears.
Blue anorak. New. Red cardigan. Grey skirt. Grey socks. I can't remember her shoes. I can check when I get home. She's only got the 2 pairs. Oh, and she always wears the same bracelet. A silver charm bracelet her father gave to her. He sends her one of those little charms for her birthday every year.
Anything else I should know?
No.
Frost looks up at her.
No, not really.
Outside the station, Colin, a younger man with longish brown hair and a beard, is waiting for Cheryl.
No, it isn't bloody well all right. You should have come with me.
Don't start, Cheryl. Not again.
Well, shouldn't you?
Okay. I was wrong.
Colin stomps around the car. Frost has noticed their confrontation. Inside the station, a leak drips into a bucket.
D.S. Gilmore! Your car!
On his way out, Frost passes P.C. Wallace, who then passes D.S. Gilmore.
Who is that?
Your gardener.
Rumpled, round-faced, and middle-aged, Gilmore follows Frost. Colin Fletcher drives home with Cheryl Bartlett.
She's punishing us. That's what this is all about. You know it is. She's just punishing us.
Yes, well, maybe she's got good reason.
Oh, it's plain daft, Cheryl. I mean, for God's sake.
Oh, it was just plain daft before as well, wasn't it, Colin?
I wondered how long it would be before that came up.
She's my daughter, all right. My daughter.
In the police car park,
Frost?
Mullet summons Frost, who tries to ignore him.
Don't wind up, mind me, I mean, I don't mind driving. I drive the old woman mad, I do.
It's all right, just shut up and get in, will you?
Gilmore notices Mullet beckoning.
I think the chief superintendent would like a word, though.
Chagrined, Frost gets out of the car, scowls at Gilmore, and heads over to Mullet.
There's a bit of luck, sir. You just caught me.
I've had a telephone call from the Vicar of St. Paul's. He's very concerned about this outbreak of vandalism in the old churchyard.
I'm not surprised, sir. It's a very grave business.
Apparently some of the stuff they've been spraying on the tombstone suggests it might be the work of devil worshippers. Satanists. I'll call them what you like. I assured him I'd have a senior officer look into it.
You'll be lucky. We've only got about six blokes who can stand up, let alone chase a box of black magic.
I want a car in the area tonight. The vulnerable time seems to be between 10 and midnight.
Mullet pulls out. Frost rides with Gilmore, who searches for something in his pocket as he drives. Momentarily distracted, he nearly rear-ends another car.
Jeez!
As the other car drives off, Frost gets out and changes places with Gilmore. Back in the car, Gilmore pulls out the cigarettes he was searching for.
You sure you don't mind? As long as you don't knock ash over my nice clean carpet.
Gilmore glances at it and smiles.
Oh, yeah, right.
He lights up.
How long have you given up? 3 and a bit weeks.
Gilmore inhales deeply.
It's not easy, is it?
Then exhales toward Frost.
No.
As they pull into the courtyard of the refurbished farmhouse, the husband stomps out to accost them.
What the hell time do you call this?
Sorry?
Well, you are the police, I take it.
Yes, that's right, sir.
Yeah, well, my wife called you at 9 o'clock this morning.
Oh, Mr. Compton, is it, sir?
Compton.
Oh, we wondered about that, didn't we, Tom?
Yeah, we was wondering about that.
Yeah, whether it was Compton or Compton. Oh, by the way, Detective Inspector Frost, this is Sergeant Gilmore. Well, shall we go inside, sir, or would you prefer the interview al fresco?
Compton's wife, Alex, is waiting in the book-lined library.
I've finally arrived.
Sorry about that, Mrs. Compton. We've been up to our eyes.
You do know I've been frightened out of my life.
It's all right, darling.
He puts a comforting arm around her.
Sit down, will you?
Frost exchanges a look with Gilmore.
Thank you.
Oh, do you mind if I smoke?
Well, yes, I do, actually.
Quite right, madam.
Gilmore pockets his smokes and takes out a notepad.
Whenever you're ready.
Well, it started about a month ago. I was alone in the house. George was away on business. At about 1 o'clock in the morning, the phone rang. When I answered it, the receiver went down. It rang again every half hour throughout the night.
The place as isolated as this, she was obviously terrified.
Then we started getting these disgusting magazines through the post. I mean, God only knows, we're broad-minded enough. But these were horrible.
And before you ask, no, we didn't keep them. They went straight on the fire.
Were they addressed to the both of you?
No, to my wife.
Then the phone call started again. Night after night. This time, he kept repeating my name.
And you didn't recognize the voice?
Of course she didn't recognize the voice. Do you think we'd be sitting here if she did?
And you've got no idea who could be doing this?
None whatsoever. It's obviously some warped bastard's idea of a joke.
Yeah, well, there's usually a reason for this sort of thing, warped or otherwise, but none that you can think of.
I've already said no.
What line of business you in, sir?
We deal in rare books and prints. There's a few manuscripts. There's over £250,000 worth of stock in the library.
That's a bit of a risk, isn't it, sir?
There's a highly sophisticated alarm system and automatic sprinklers in every room. It was a condition of the insurance policy. Though what the hell that has to do with this business, I've no idea.
Right, sir. Anything else happens, phone the station right away and ask for me, Frost.
Are you saying you're taking no action?
What I'm saying is, apart from seeing if the Undertaker can tell us anything, there's very little action we can take. Unless there's a direct threat to your wife's life. Sorry.
Gilmore marvellous. Follows him out.
Bloody marvellous.
My what on Wednesday?
Frost arrives cancel. Home to find his sister-in-law,
no.
Marion, on the phone.
Leonard, just cancel it.
What do you mean, what do you tell them? You tell them I'm visiting my sister's grave in England. That's what you tell them. Oh, Leonard, why is it that every time I leave the house for more than 10 minutes, you disintegrate? Will you please pull yourself together and act like a mature human being?
Frost turns on the overhead light as he steps into the living room.
No, Leonard, no, I am not being aggressive. I am being...
As he sinks down on the couch, she notices some changes in the room.
And I no longer wish to continue this conversation. I shall call you tomorrow. Goodbye, Leonard.
As he returns a glass bowl to its normal place, Marion comes in and switches off the overhead light. Frost contains his annoyance and sits down again.
Leonard sends his love.
Oh, all right.
You didn't mind that I phoned him?
No, fine.
He worries about me. So, what was your day like?
Day? Well, you know, this and that. What was your day like?
Fraught. I'll get your dinner.
Oh, right.
And just to set your mind at rest, I shall stay as long as you need me.
What about Leonard?
Leonard understands. Oh, and I phoned your doctor. You have an appointment for a vitamin B shot Thursday 9 a.m. I've written it on your pad.
Alone, Frost heaves a sigh of disgust. At night, in pouring rain, the warden leaves the church. After checking the doors locked, he collects his bicycle. Mounting up, he starts off, hunched against the rain. As he pedals past the cemetery, he stops.
Who's that? Who is it?
Dimly through the rain, he sees two figures run away. At the table with Marion, Frost picks at his dinner.
You must be lonely now.
I was lonely before.
Oh, that's very unfair, Bill.
Unfair or not, it happens to be true. It wasn't much of a marriage.
Are you sure you want me to hear this?
Oh, come on, Marion. Close or not, she must have said something.
Well, we did pick up certain vibrations. You're not eating your broccoli.
Don't like broccoli.
It's good for you.
But just so you know, I don't like anything green.
Well, what vegetables do you like?
Grey ones. You like some tea?
I bought some real coffee.
Frost carries his plate into the kitchen and scrapes the remains of his dinner into the dustbin. Marion brings her plate in as he fills the kettle.
I know it's been a terrible shock, but you mustn't let yourself go.
Marion, I was always like this. That was half the trouble.
Far be it from me and tell me to mind my own business, but I can tell from your complexion. You eat the wrong things at the wrong time. For instance, you eat far too much meat, right?
Marion.
He goes to answer the phone.
Frost.
Soon after.
Sorry to call you out, Gov.
It's all right. I reckon you did me a favor.
Gilmore's waiting for him at the cemetery. They join a constable and the church warden at a gate outside one of the crypts.
Right.
This is Mr. Turner, sir, the church warden.
Evening.
It was me who reported.
I've had a look around. No sign of anyone.
There were two of them, I think.
See. Broke into the crypt, you said.
Must have done. They were ringing the bell.
See. Well, how did they get in?
There are some broken railings around the side.
Right, well, the sooner we take a look, the sooner we can get home. Isn't that right, Mr.
Turner?
Frost leads the way around to a gap in the iron fence that encloses the crypt. He squeezes through and makes his way back to the front door of the crypt.
Come on, Constable, let's have some light on the subject.
The constable's flashlight reveals that the screws have been jimmied loose from the padlocked hasp. They follow the constable's flashlight beam down steep stairs to the basement of the crypt. In the gloom, they peer at the burial vaults stacked against the walls.
I thought it would have been bigger.
Why? They're not going to get up and dance, are they?
Gilmore tugs on a chain.
What's a bell doing inside a crypt?
It was installed 150 years ago by the first William Dobson. He was terrified of being buried alive. He wanted to be able to summon help in case he woke up in his coffin.
Well, must have died with a smile on his face, eh? Well, Mr. Turner, everything seems to be in order.
Still the door all broken?
Yes, I know, or we won't.
Frost has noticed something.
Certainly.
A black plastic bag is half hidden among the vaults. He steps over to it. Taking out his penknife, he carefully cuts open the bag. A forearm flops out with a silver charm bracelet around its wrist.
Get on the radio to the station, son. Tell Sergeant Wells we found a body in the churchyard. And when he stops laughing, tell him I think it's young Paula Bartlett.
Gilmore interviews the warden.
I told you there were two of them. What, tall, short, young, old, what? I couldn't see. I'm not a trained observer. That's your job. And excuse me, but where were you when they were here? You were supposed to be on watch, not keeping your feet warm around someone else's fire, I shouldn't run.
Thanks for being so patient, Mr. Turner. If anything else should occur to you, would you be good enough to call us at the station?
Gilmore steps over to another detective.
Don't suppose anyone's got a flask of tea, have they?
Sorry, Gov. Might be an apple in the car.
I could kill for a cup of tea and a bacon sandwich. Where's the governor?
Gone over to tell the girl's parents.
Gilmore shakes his head.
One of the joys, eh?
Cheryl Bartlett is shocked and dismayed. She sinks onto her sofa. Frost waits, hating to be the bearer of this news. She looks up at him.
The thing is, I mean, you're not saying it's her, definitely.
What I'm saying is, according to the description you gave us, we have reason to believe.
You won't be identified then?
Frost glances at Colin.
Yes. Whenever you're, you know.
Tentatively, Colin sits next to Cheryl.
I'll do it, love.
You've done enough, haven't you? If it's my daughter, I want to see her. All right, I want to see her!
A bus rolls along a country road. Inside it, a young black boy, gazing out the window, glimpses something and gets up. The bus lets him out at the side of the road. He waits for it to drive on. Then he makes his way over to a ditch and what he glimpsed. At the station...
No, that's all right, Dory. You tell him to stay in bed till he's really fit. We'll manage. Right. Bye, love. Skiving bastard.
Who is?
Johnny Johnson. Everyone knows he's a bloody hypochondriac. And he got a headache and he thinks it's a tumour.
Been on all night, have you?
No, 6 o'clock. I'm just about up to here with it. Mullet wants to see you.
Canteen open, is it?
No.
Why is it so cold in here?
That's another thing. Central heating's up the spout.
He turns on a constable.
What do you want?
A space heater glows warmly in the office of Superintendent Mullet.
Yes?
Good morning, sir. You wanted to see me?
Good morning. Yes. I understand the girl's parents have identified the body.
Yes, mother, sir.
Anything for us to go on?
No, not as yet. Frenzy are at it. We'll wait and see what the postmortem shows up.
Which is when?
He said he'll phone me, probably early this afternoon.
Frost hovers over the heater. When Mullet beckons for him not to block it, Frost turns away, exposing his backside to it.
In the absence of Chief Inspector Allen, I've decided to take full executive control of this case myself, leaving you responsible for the day-to-day routine.
Suits me, sir.
Whether it suits you or not is hardly relevant. Now, what else have you got on?
Nothing, Conway.
Good. So this is your number one priority. What do you need to achieve an earlier result?
A lot more men and a lot of bloody luck.
Luck seems to be something you have in spades. As for manpower, I'm sorry. What we have is all we're getting. Keep me informed.
Suppressing a sigh.
Yes, sir.
Frost heads for the door.
Oh, and, Jack, I thought I asked you to keep that graveyard under surveillance.
Good job we didn't, sir. Otherwise, we might never have turned up the body.
As I said, in spades.
Frost smiles and goes out. Later, he drives with Gilmore.
I've got daughters. Two, as a matter of fact. We live, what, 200 yards from the bus stop. But either me or the missus is always there to meet them. Oh, Dad, they say. Oh, Dad, nothing, I say. You don't walk home on your own, not even 200 yards.
Frost pulls to a stop.
No. You stay there and eat your dinner.
Gilmore shrugs and returns to his hamburger as Frost gets out.
Sure.
Entering a newsagent's, Frost peruses the magazines on display. He lifts one down for a closer look. Titled Titbits with a Naked Woman on the cover, Frost opens it and frowns.
Does your father know what you do for a living?
He shakes his head and replaces the magazine as the newsagent enters.
Not what you were looking for, eh, sir?
No, not really.
Not adult enough, is that it?
Well, something like that.
I do have some more interesting material out the back. Videos and so forth for the more discerning amongst us.
Is that right?
It's more expensive, of course.
Well, of course.
But I do take cards.
Well, all cards?
Most of them.
Yeah? I'll take that one.
Frost shows him his warrant card.
Just pulling your leg, that's all.
Me too, Mr. Rickman. It is Mr. Rickman, isn't it?
Geoffrey Rickman, yes. How can I help you?
Her mother told me that Paula Bartlett did her paper round from here.
Oh, that poor kid. And a poor mother. I mean, I was telling my wife. We heard it on the radio. I mean, you read about these things, but you never...
He notices Frost's impatience.
Yes, she did, yes.
Right, well, the morning she went missing, a Monday, did you notice anything different about her?
No, she came in, same as usual. No, a bit later than usual, actually. Not much, 10 minutes or so.
Mm. I haven't got a map of her round, have you?
No. But I could do you one.
Oh, thank you. You're a gent. How long did it usually take her?
Finished the round?
Yes.
Hour and a quarter, I suppose. Not that day, though.
Why? What happened that day?
Well, she never finished it, did she?
Well, I don't know. You tell me.
I thought you would have known. But then I suppose how could you?
Known what?
She didn't deliver the last two papers.
How do you know that?
Well, they came in and complained. Mr. Bell with his independent, and the Hamiltons with the Sun. I never thought anything about it at the time. You see, sometimes I think I've put them in the bag, and I haven't. And now that poor cow.
Mm. What was she like? I mean, how would you sum her up? Is she immature or old for her age or what?
No, immature, definitely. And moody. Very moody.
Do you have any boyfriends?
Not that I know of. Shouldn't have thought so. She was a plain little thing. She didn't get on with her so-called stepfather, by all accounts. But you know all about that, no doubt.
Would I?
Well, there was all that trouble, wasn't there?
What's there?
Well, I mean, he's got to be a bit peculiar, hasn't he? I mean, what sort of a bloke goes with a woman 10 years older than him?
Cheryl is in her daughter's room, grieving, when Colin hesitantly opens the door.
Don't stay near Cheryl. Can't do any good, you know it, Colin.
I'll go to Ruth's for a couple of days.
What about the police?
What about the police? They've got something to tell me. You know where I am.
Oh, I'll run you over there then.
Just take me to the station. That will do.
Yeah.
I just want to get out of this house for a few days. Be on my own.
What you mean is, be with your family. Hmm? Your proper family. Why don't you say it? Why don't you say what you're really thinking? You think I don't know?
He starts off. In the forensics lab.
I would say she'd been dead approximately 36 hours.
Yes. The afternoon she went missing.
As you can see, there are signs of manual pressure applied to the neck. The killer's hands went round her neck, so. The girl would have struggled, grabbing his wrists, but he maintained his grip, swung her from side to side, striking her head against a wall. Probably hard enough to make her lose consciousness. And, as you can see, there are marks on the body and bruising to the side of the head.
If she struggled, wouldn't she have marked him in some way, you know, scratched him and so on?
If you're looking for telltale pieces of flesh under the fingernails, then I must disappoint you, Inspector. We didn't find anything.
Pity.
There is clear evidence of sexual intercourse shortly before she died.
Rape.
There's evidence of bruising that could suggest intercourse took place against her will. On the other hand...
She was raped.
If I might be allowed to continue. The girl was a virgin. She could have submitted willingly, but remained tensed instead of relaxed. This might account for the bruising. Equally, she could have been raped. There's no magic way of knowing at this stage.
So if I produce a suspect...
We could positively incriminate him or eliminate him if you supply us with a blood sample for comparison.
Oh, I'll get you a blood sample. Even if I've got to drain it out of him myself. I mean, look at that. She's just a kid.
Gilmore leaves. Frost looks down at the girl's pallid face.
Anything else?
Yes, the stomach contents. This gray...
Just tell me about it, will you please, Doc?
She hadn't had time to digest her last meal before she died. Something with chips and peas. A sad little meal for a sad little end. You'll have a detailed analysis sometime tomorrow.
Gilmore is washing his hands and face in the change room when Frost joins him.
Oh, sorry if I let you down in there, Governor.
No, don't worry about it.
Oh, I can't stand post-mortems. Ever since I was a bobby on a beat, they turned me stomach. I still can't get used to it. When you see someone like that, you know, I don't know, it's just a pointless waste.
The first post-mortem that I went to, he took out the pelvic bone and he said, do you mind if I keep this, Constable? It's very interesting. And he shoved in a piece of chicken wire.
You joking?
No, as I live and breathe.
Frost's car roars up the driveway of the Sandmoor Golf Club. Colin Fletcher is mending the handle of a shovel in the maintenance garage when he notices Frost standing in the doorway.
Any news?
Not yet, I'm afraid, Mr. Fletcher. Can't be easy working with something like this on your mind.
It's either this or sitting at home staring at the wall. But I mostly work by myself. Makes it easier. Not having to talk to people. Seeing them not knowing what to say.
By the way, Mr. Fletcher, I'll need to see the girl's room.
That's no problem. The mother's gone away.
Oh?
She wanted to get away from the house.
She's got to stay at her sister's for a couple of days.
If she wants...
No, it's all right. What, shall we say about 6 o'clock?
Yeah, that's fine.
Good.
Frost starts to leave.
Truth is...
He stops.
I wanted to have a word with you anyway.
Frost spins around.
Oh, yes. What about?
I think there's a bloke involved.
A bloke? What do you mean?
The night before, after we'd had this bloody row, Cheryl went down to shops to get some fags, and... Well, Paula must have thought I'd gone too, because she made this telephone call. I didn't hear it all, but she was telling this bloke how she'd really had enough this time. How she was leaving home and that she'd see him same time tomorrow. As soon as she put the phone down, I asked her what it was all about, but she just blanked me. We didn't exactly get on, me and her.
Did you get a name? What makes you think it was a bloke? It could have been anyone. Girlfriend, classmate?
No, definitely male. It was the way she spoke. Kind of putting it on, you know. The way they do.
Did you tell her mother?
No.
Why not?
I thought she was going to be all right.
Later... Gilmore trots back to the car from a house.
Two old ladies. The Mrs. Parkinson.
One of them saw the girl pedaling down the drive after she delivered their newspaper.
Which way did she turn?
Couldn't remember.
So she delivers her papers up to here and then she stops. Why didn't she finish her round?
Maybe a bloke turned up. Funny way of running off with your boyfriend, I would have thought. Halfway through your paper round.
Yeah.
They get into the car and continue along the girl's route, which takes them into the country.
Bloody sure I wouldn't want one of my kids delivering papers out of the way place like this. I don't know, parents, they ask for it sometimes, don't they?
Ask for it or not, they're paying for it. There you go, farm cottage, Mr. and Mrs. Hamilton.
They pull into the yard of the farm cottage. The yard is littered with junk and derelict vehicles. As they head for the front door of the run-down cottage...
Shut up! For God's sake, shut up! Get back in there! Who is he?
Police!
What do you want?
We're looking for Lord Lucan. Open up, love.
Come round the back, I'm busy.
A Belgian shepherd barks at them angrily from a window as they make their way around to the back.
Well?
Don't you want to see any identification?
You what? You can look more like a copper if you had a flashing blue light sticking out your head.
It's about the young girl who delivers your newspaper.
Young Paula?
Yes.
Yeah, sad, isn't it?
You know about that, then?
We're not that skimp, we haven't got a television.
But you haven't got a licence.
Can't have everything in this world.
Did you see her Monday morning?
I wasn't here.
Was anyone?
He was.
Is he here now?
Does it look like he's here?
What time will he be back?
Depends how well he's done.
What's that mean?
He works the markets. If he's done well, he's liable to stay out all night, pissing it up against the wall.
We'll come back then.
Suit yourself.
What time will be convenient?
Not between 6 and 8. We're having a cocktail party.
Despite himself, Frost can't help smiling. Back in the car, they continue along the girl's route.
This should have been our last port of call, Mr. and Mrs. Michael Bell.
They arrive at a well-kept country house. They find no one home.
All locked up by the look of it.
Frost notices some black trash bags near the front door. He taps them with his toe.
Bin bags on the brain.
Do you know where he works?
Frost enters a library. He finds his way through the stacks to a doorway that leads to some stairs. He takes the stairs up to an office.
Mr. Bell?
Yes?
Detective Inspector Frost, Denton CID.
Oh, yes, of course. They said you were coming. It's about Paula, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, I'm not sure how I can help you.
Well, did you see her that morning?
No, I didn't.
Did anyone? Your wife, perhaps?
My wife is dead. It was her funeral on Monday. Her parents had come down on the overnight train, and I'd gone early to the station to meet them, which is why I wasn't at home that morning.
I see. I'm sorry, sir.
No. She'd been ill for some time and was expected. Mm. Nevertheless, you'll appreciate that it's a very difficult time for me.
Yes, of course. Sorry, I have to...
Not at all. Please ask your questions.
What time did you get back home, sir?
Let's see, the service was over by 11:30. There was a slight hiatus because it came on to rain very heavily. The perfect day, you might say. Afterwards, we had a rather desultory lunch at the Stamford Hotel. I didn't have the heart to invite people back to the house. I took the in-laws to the station and was back home by... just after 2, I think it was.
I see. And your in-laws can confirm all this, of course.
Yes, of course.
And you saw no sign of the girl at all that day?
No. I'm afraid not.
No. Well, that's all the questions I have to ask you. Really, I'm sorry I've had to bother you, sir, but in a case like this...
It's... Not at all.
You understand. Thank you.
Frost heads for the door.
Well, by the way, you called her Paula. Does that mean that you knew her?
You mean you don't know?
A lot of people seem to be asking me that lately. Don't know what, sir.
He steps back to Bell.
Well, I gave her a lift to school most mornings after her paper round. I mean, it's a long way out if the weather was bad.
How did that come about?
Well, I'm a friend of Colin Fletcher. We belong to the same angling club. I assumed Colin would have told you.
So you must have chatted to her.
Oh, we talked, certainly.
Did she ever mention anything about a boyfriend or anything?
Good Lord, no. She wasn't that sort of girl.
Frost stares at him for a moment, then smiles.
Thank you for your time, sir.
Frost reports back to Mullet.
Her round took her from the Parkinson's, out of the Hamiltons, then onto the Bells. But on Monday, that's as far as she got.
So, the three big questions are, who's this man she's supposed to be meeting? Why didn't she get any further than the Parkinson's? And what happened to the bicycle she was riding?
I suppose the bloke could have always thrown the bike into the boot of his car, assuming, of course, he had a car, and assuming even more that there is a bloke.
You think this man Fletcher could be lying?
I don't know. It just doesn't seem right. I mean, run off with a bloke, yeah, but not in the middle of your paper round. I had a word with some of her friends at school. If she was seeing a bloke, she was keeping very shtum about it. She's very unusual for a 15-year-old, and a 15-year-old virgin at that. Anyway, this is an identical bike, except hers was yellow. They didn't make a note of the serial number, but I'm chasing up all the retailers. We might have a bit of luck, because it's only 6 months old. The only other thing that's missing, of course, is the bag that she carried her papers in.
What action have you taken?
Sir?
I've got a couple of teams out looking, and I've also given the story to the local rag. They'll be publishing it tomorrow. But what I was hoping for, sir, was for you to get us a few minutes on the telly.
Right, I'll look into that straight away. If I catch them now, I should just make the early evening news.
Do you want me to go on, sir?
No, I'll do it.
As Mullet hurries out, Frost shares a smile with a clerk.
Cover your animals' eyes and lock up your children. Mr. Mullet's making another one of his television appearances.
Later, in Paula's room.
So, nothing missing then? No clothes, no money, no suitcases?
No, nothing.
Funny that, isn't it? You'd think if she was going off with some bloke like
Could you have come back after you left for work, sir?
Well, no, she left her key behind.
Why would she do that?
I don't know. I suppose she either forgot. Well, like I said, we were having this terrible row. Or maybe she just left it, sort of let us know she won't come in back. I don't know.
Did you see the key after she'd left for her paper round?
No. Well, I didn't come up here.
Then she could have left it when she came back the second time, if she did, that is.
What did she have for breakfast?
Nothing. That's how the row started again.
What about the night before, Sunday?
What did she have to eat? Same as us. Roast lamb. Why?
Where were you Monday morning, Mr. Fletcher?
I was at work.
On your own or with anyone?
I was on my own most of the day. Look, what are you trying to...
Do you mind if I have a look down, sir?
As Gilmore leaves, Frost shuts the door behind him and turns back to Colin, who's sitting on the girl's bed.
I've got to be honest with you, Mr. Fletcher. All that stuff about you not wanting to tell the mother because you didn't want to upset her about the girl going with that bloke, I don't know. Sounds a bit iffy to me.
How do you mean, iffy?
Well, all I know is if it had been my daughter...
But she's not my daughter, is she?
All the same.
She said if I told her mother, she'd cause trouble.
What do you mean, trouble?
She said she'd say I'd been interfering with her.
Quite the little schemer, eh?
You don't know the half of it.
Frost sits down on the bed beside him.
I know she's made allegations of sexual harassment against you before. It's on record.
It was when I first moved in with Cheryl. She just hated me. I know she was upset about her father, but she made our life hell, I can tell you.
And not one grain of truth in what she said.
She wanted nothing more than me out of her mother's life and her father back in it. And that's how she chose to go about it.
Back at home with Marion, Frost watches Mullet on TV.
As yet, no trace has been found.
If I caught the 11 o'clock express, I could do the West End and be back in good time to cook you a meal, or maybe we might go out somewhere.
Yes, right.
Incidentally, what are you doing with her things? The newspaper
bag things? Is made of fluorescent yellow. Oh, things. I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it. Get rid of it, most of it. Clothes, certainly. Oxfam, something like that.
Maybe we should do that together. It'll make it less painful for you. And I do know there are one or two bits and pieces that she'd like me to have. Things Mother gave her. You wouldn't mind.
No. Go on, you take what you want. I've got to go. I've got to go to work.
Well, what about your food?
It's all right, I'll have something else.
He shares fish and chips with Gilmore in the church cemetery.
Whoever killed her didn't just stagger in here with a body all neatly gift-wrapped, hoping he'd find somewhere to hide her. He knew that crypt was there. He knew how to get into it. Unhealthy places, graveyards. Give me a decent cremation any day. My wife's buried over there.
Frost looks at a note he's found in his coat pocket.
Is it Plummer?
Yes.
I knew there was something I wanted to show you. Come on.
He leads Gilmore over to the standpipe he noticed earlier.
I noticed it last night. Well, it looks like it's just been put in.
Yes, and the vicar would know who by, wouldn't he? I'll wait for you in the car.
He thrusts the greasy fish and chips wrapper at Gilmore, who looks for a place to dispose of it. Later, at the station...
Right, where is he? Number two.
Frost opens the interview room door enough to peer at the man inside.
No, he's guilty. Don't bother with the trial. Just hang him.
Bernard Hicks. 44, married, no children. The day the girl went missing, he was supposed to be working in the cemetery installing that new standpipe. His timesheet says he started work at 8, but the vicar's positive he didn't arrive till well gone 9.
Right. Let's have it.
Frost takes the file and enters the interview room.
Sorry to keep you, Mr. Hicks. Just a few questions, if I may.
I'd like to ask you one first. Mm-hmm. What am I doing here?
Haven't they told you? It's just routine inquiries, Mr. Hicks.
All the same, you people. Come on, then, get it over with. I've got a living to make.
Right. Now, Monday morning, according to your timesheet here, you started work at 8 o'clock. Now, that's a bit of a porky, isn't it, Mr. Hicks?
Is that what this is about? I fiddle one rotten hour and the bastard's calling the flying squad. Well, they can stuff the lad.
Just a minute!
He whips out a photo of the dead girl.
It's her I'm interested in. You read the papers and you know what happened to her and where it happened to her.
I didn't have nothing to do with it. For Christ's sake.
Monday morning, you weren't where you were supposed to be.
Frost sits down and crosses his arms.
Tell me about it.
I'm supposed to be putting in a new standpipe. They're extending the burial section, so the hot piping had to be rerouted. I'll get the van out, but it won't start. So I call this mate of mine. He's one of these mobile mechanics. And by the time he's fixed it, I'm an hour late.
He lights a cigarette.
I worked in the cemetery till dark, apart from half an hour in the pub for me dinner.
Rerouting the pipes, were you? Did that mean going through the old crypt?
No, of course it didn't.
So what were you doing in there?
How the hell do you know?
What were you doing in there?
About 11 o'clock, there was this bloody great storm. I was getting absolutely soaked. I was only just getting over the flu. Anyway, I was by the crypt, and I tried to get in out of the rain, and I couldn't. So I forced the screws out of my hammer and stood inside the door. When the rain stopped, I put the screws back in and got on my work.
Frost considers this.
Well, I see you live in Blandford, haven't you?
That's right.
It's on the girl's paper around Blandford, haven't you?
I've never even seen her, I tell you.
No, of course you haven't. What's the name of this mechanic of yours?
A breeze stirs the bare branches of a tree in the courtyard of the Comptons' farmhouse. The maid, Mrs. Blakeston, comes out of the attached barn with a basket. As she passes an ornamental pond, she notices the dead fish floating in it. She steps over for a closer look. All the fish are dead. Upset, she hurries around the house to the kitchen, where Alex Compton is paging through a recipe book.
What are they like? Oh! Not bad. Not bad at all. Cup of coffee, I think. Then we can get on with the vegetables.
Well, have you seen your pond?
The pond? Why?
The fish. They're dead.
Dead?
What do you mean, dead?
Dead! Floating on the top, they are.
Dismayed, Alex steps over to the phone.
Yes?
Upset, she hangs up. A soil aerator rolls behind a tractor on the golf course. Staring through the tractor's windshield, Colin Fletcher sees something that brings him to a halt. Ahead, Frost is talking to the greenskeeper. Colin puts the tractor in gear again and rolls forward, towing the aerator. Frost and Gilmore visit the Comptons.
Take your time, Mrs. Compton.
My Daly was here. We were preparing food for a dinner I'm giving this evening.
Was giving.
She, Mrs. Blakeston, went into the barn where we store the apples, and when she came back, she said that all the fish in the pond were dead.
I checked. It's full of bleach.
I just didn't understand. And then the telephone rang, and when I answered it, he said...
He said, easy to kill the fish, easy to kill you.
The same voice?
Yes.
And you still can't recognize it? And you can't think of anyone who might be doing it to you?
No.
Mrs. Compton?
No.
Compton follows Frost and Gilmore outside.
If that doesn't constitute a direct threat on my wife's life, I don't know what does.
Well, she certainly seems to be the target.
Right, so what are you going to do?
We'll make the usual inquiries and see what we can pick up. But as I said before, in a situation like this, without any positive leads...
Yeah, well, all I know is this. If that bastard so much as lays one finger on my wife, I'll kill him. That's a promise.
It's not a very clever one, though, is it, sir? Now, why don't you just leave it to us, all right?
Compton scowls and goes back inside as the detectives return to their car.
Not a lot to go on.
Well, we know what we think of him.
What do you make of her?
I wouldn't say no, if that's what you
don't
mean.
Don't mess about. I'm being serious.
Well, typical, I suppose.
Of what?
That sort of woman. Bit of a bimbo.
Pound to her penny, she knows more than she's saying.
Next, they visit the Hamiltons' cottage.
You'll get no sense out of him. He's had a right skinful.
Oh, no, I haven't.
Of course you haven't. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been able to drive that van home, would you, Mr. Hamilton? Have you got one of those nice little balloons, Andy Sergeant?
Oh, I never leave home without one, sir.
What do you want?
Well, Monday morning, your wife was out, I understand.
I'm not his wife. I'm his significant other person.
That's right. She'd been out all night working with the Salvation Army. Ho, ho. Yes, but you were in first thing. No.
Your significant other person says you were, sir.
Yeah, well, I've got this mate, you see. I've been helping him train his greyhounds.
You promised me you wouldn't go anywhere near him and his rotten dog again.
That was Saturday.
I'll kill him. I will. I'll kill him!
She storms into another room.
For God's sake, shut up!
What about her and her dog?
What time did you get home?
About 4.
And the paper still hadn't been delivered.
I went in next day and complained about it. Poor little kid, eh?
Do you mind if we have a look round?
What for?
I can easily get a warrant, an hour at the most.
In the garage, the Hamiltons watch the detective sort through a pile of black plastic bags.
Just tell me, what is it you're looking for?
What about a kid's bicycle?
I don't know anything about a bicycle.
What are you looking so worried about?
Frost uncovers something. He shares a look with Gilmore. Then he holds up several rolls of toilet paper. He turns to Hamilton.
I've got a mate works for the council. He gets this stuff for me. So, bin bags, toilet rolls, that sort of stuff. Yeah, all right, he nicks it. I'll sell it down the market.
You gonna book him?
No, I'm gonna give him a medal. Of course I'm going to bloody book him.
Disgusted, Frost throws down the toilet paper. At the golf course, Colin Fletcher is cleaning the aerator. When Frost finds him.
What is it this time?
Mr. Fletcher, I've had the pathologist's report. And I must tell you, there's evidence of sexual interference before Paula died. I shan't be releasing this information to the press, but it's bound to come out sooner or later. And I thought you might like to find a way in which you can tell her mother.
I suppose in a way we'd already guessed.
I'm sorry to be hard on you, sir, but there's still one or two questions I must ask. Did Paula wear lipstick?
Lipstick? She might have worn some when she went to a party.
There's none in her room.
No, she always used her mother's.
But she didn't wear any to go to school that Monday morning, for instance.
Of course she didn't. Why do you ask?
Because she was wearing some when she died. It's in the pathologist's report. It would be a help if you could ask her mother to check to see if she's got any lipstick missing.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, yes, there was one other thing. I understand that one of the people Paula delivered her papers to used to give her a lift to school most mornings.
Mike. Mike Bell.
Yeah, a friend of yours, is he, sir?
Not a friend, exactly. We belong to the same angling club, or used to. He gave up fishing when his wife was taken ill. She died last week.
Yeah, so I understand. So he's more of an acquaintance then, you and Mr. Bell.
We didn't socialise, if that's what you mean. The odd drink. Perhaps no more than that. Why'd you ask?
Because I thought you might have mentioned the fact that he took her to school in his car.
It just didn't... It just didn't occur to me, that's all. I didn't think it was that important.
No, sir. Probably not important at all.
Tapping the tractor, Frost leaves him with a smile. Back at the station, in the crime room...
Contents of the girl's stomach. Chicken chips and peas, white bread and butter. Wait for it. A dab of brown sauce. A way to earn a living. Chicken was still partially frozen. He reckons it had come straight out of the freezer and gone in the microwave. It's only partly digested. He estimates it was eaten about an hour or so before death.
So he took her somewhere before he killed her?
Not necessarily. He could have met her after she'd had the meal.
Don't forget she said to the bloke on the phone, same time tomorrow.
According to Colin Fletcher, that's what she said.
What was the time of death?
Well, as near as he could say, it was sometime late Monday afternoon. Mm.
The day she went missing.
That's right, yeah. Any response to Horn-Rimmed Harry's TV spectacular?
Yeah, it's been pretty good, actually.
15 sightings. 10 of them impossible, the other 5 dodgy, but we're checking.
What about the bike?
Nothing.
Anything else?
Yeah, well, the plumber seems to be in the clear. We've got a statement from the mechanic who did his van and 4 witnesses who saw him working in the churchyard.
All right, well, he can go to the back of the queue. Anything turned up on our famous computer?
The Hamilton, sir. They've both got form. He's been done 3 times, twice for receiving, once for GBH. He took a bottle to someone in a pub. Apparently, quote, he's a devil when the drink's on him, a real Jekyll and Hyde.
What about her?
2 cases of aggravated assault, both of them on teenage girls.
Frost nods.
That it? All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll take care of that.
Oh, Constable, tell me something. Why would a young girl who never normally wears lipstick suddenly put on?
Probably she look more attractive. Certainly to look older.
Frost considers this and nods.
Thank you. Right, I'm off to get something to eat. I'm starving.
The canteen's still closed, Gov.
Good. Life ain't all bad then, is it?
In the hall, he passes Mullet.
Oh, there you are, sir. Marvellous response to your TV appearance last night. The phones have never stopped ringing.
Yeah, it seems to have gone down rather well. All sorts of useful information.
Oh, yes.
The big news is we've had an anonymous phone call from someone saying it was he and his friends who were messing about in the churchyard that night and rang the bell. What I can make out, there'd be a bunch of hippie travellers. He said they had no idea about the girl. They certainly didn't kill her. And all they could do was apologise for any trouble that they'd caused. What do you think?
Sounds about right to me. I can't see anyone stuffing a body in a crypt and then ringing a bell to advertise the fact.
Yes, I'll buy that.
Can you get on the bicycle?
Not yet.
No, well, we can't expect everything all at once, can we, sir?
Frost heads out past the duty desk.
Anybody wants me, I'm at home.
You've got a visitor.
Hey?
Frost looks into the waiting area and sees Alex Compton. He takes her out for coffee.
Does my husband have to know?
Bound to find out sooner or later.
It's just he's so incredibly jealous. I don't know what he'll do.
How did you meet this man?
We were in London for a book fair. Oh, 2 months ago now. George was with some clients and he telephoned the hotel saying he was bringing them back and I was to meet them in the bar. So I went downstairs and there was this man there and we just started talking. It was all entirely innocent, I promise you. I made it quite clear that I was waiting for my husband. He never made any sort of move. We just talked. Well, the next morning, some flowers were delivered with a note asking if we could meet. My God, you can imagine. Obviously, I hadn't told George anything about the man because he's so horribly jealous. He got into a fight once before, over nothing, absolutely nothing. Well, then the telephone call started. I mean, God knows how he got our number. We're not even in the book. At first, I tried to make light of it, not to make it too heavy, make it a sort of joke. But when he persisted, I finally said that if it carried on like that, I would put the matter in the hands of the police. All he said was, all right, you bitch, we'll see about that.
And all you knew about him was his name was Lawrence, but you didn't get his surname.
I've seen him. Well, that's why I made up my mind I had to tell you.
You've seen him when?
This afternoon. I was driving into town and the car behind me kept flashing its lights. And when I looked in the mirror, it was him. I braked instinctively and he drove past, gone.
You didn't get the number?
Well, I didn't think. I was completely...
What about the car?
Well, I... It was a medium-sized saloon, dark blue, I think. Black, perhaps. A Ford. I think it was a Ford.
Frost considers this.
If he phones again, I want you to arrange a meeting with him.
Well, how can I do that?
Just try. Just play him along, lead him up the path.
That isn't my style, Inspector.
And when you've arranged it, what you do is you tell me. You don't meet him on your own.
Or tell my husband.
Well, that's up to you.
A black woman arrives home.
Damien!
Pulling a newspaper from the mail slot, she heads into the kitchen. After putting down her purse and shopping bags, she turns on the radio and the kettle. Then sits down on a stool to look at the paper and rub her tired feet. The headline reads, Police Appeal for Murdered Girl's Bicycle. Frowning, she steps over to a window. Looking down, she sees the young boy who got off the bus riding a yellow bicycle in the street below. Frost peers through his mail slot.
Leonard. Oh, Leonard, listen.
His sister-in-law is on the phone.
Leonard, oh, please.
After dropping his newspaper on the kitchen table,
I could get you one for £15, but I don't think you'd like the quality.
He waits in mounting impatience for her to get off.
What? Light green or dark green? They have both. The dark green, you're sure about that? With your complexion, I would have thought the blue. Well, they have Oxford blue and they have Cambridge blue. I would have thought the Cambridge...
Oh. Finally, fed up, he throws down the paper and steps over to the doorway.
I'm sorry. Do you mind? I am expecting a call.
He returns to the kitchen to make a cup of tea.
He needs to use the telephone. I'll call you.
Marion steps into the kitchen doorway.
I'm very sorry.
It's just that people try to phone here and they can't get through.
You mean I'm using the telephone too much?
Yes, I'm sorry. That's what I mean. I'm sorry, but there you go.
I have every intention of reimbursing you.
Oh, it's not a question of the money, is it, Marion? I told you before, it's... people can't get through.
I'm very sorry, it won't happen again.
Yeah, well, all right, okay. Let's just forget about it now, shall we, okay?
Marion picks up his newspaper.
The newspaper's torn.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Did it just now when I pulled it out of the letter... Oh, Marion, look, it's not going to work, you staying here.
I see.
It's my fault. I thought it would be all right having someone around the house, but I was wrong. I'm not ready for it. So it's my fault. It's nothing to do with you.
I can't pretend I haven't noticed a certain amount of hostility. However, I would have thought that as her sister...
Yes, well, maybe that's the trouble, you know. Maybe it brings back too many memories, too many things I don't need reminding about myself.
I haven't realised you're into self-pity.
Look, Marion, I don't like you and you don't like me. You never have. The only reason we put up with each other is because you're her sister. Well, now she's dead, we don't have to pretend anymore.
Frost goes to answer the phone.
Frost.
Cheer up, Governor. We found the bike.
In the living room of the Black Woman.
Come on, son. Speak up. It's nothing to be afraid of.
Found it.
What? He found it?
He told me he bought it from his friend. That is stealing, Damien. And sit up straight. The man can't hear you.
It's all right, Damien. Look, don't worry about the stealing bit. I've got it back now, and that's all I'm concerned about. Where did you find it?
It was in the ditch. I saw it when I was on the bus, so I got off and I took it.
Listen, what about the bag? Was there a bag with it? You know, one of those big newspaper bags.
His mother smacks him.
I threw it away!
Constables search along a roadway. One of them finds the newspaper bag. At the station, Frost pulls out two papers from it.
So they're both there. The Sun for the Hamiltons and the Bell's Independent. Yes, you better rush these over to Forensic. They might be able to find something, God knows what. Tell them to get their finger out, will you? I'm still waiting for the results on that bike.
They've got two blokes down with the flu, and one up an Alp. Skiing.
Skiing? Dear, oh dear. I can remember when it was 5 days in Little Hampton. I'm bloody grateful for that.
Tell us about it, God.
Oh, not the impoverished family, Frost, but the dripping sandwiches and the mugs of cold Bovril.
Wait a minute. Hey, Constable, just a minute. Bring those papers back on me, will you? Thank you.
Frost pulls out the Sun and finds it torn like his own.
Look at this. I knew there was something. See this tear? I did the same thing myself earlier. This paper has been folded, pushed into a letterbox and pulled out again.
So the Hamiltons are lying.
I was assuming it was their letterbox it was pushed into. And assuming also it was one of them that pulled it out again.
Later, Frost drives Marion, who sits coolly beside him. He lifts a couple of Harrod's shopping bags and her suitcase out of the trunk of his car. Marion gathers them up awkwardly. Amber rejects his assistance.
I'm quite capable, thank you.
Marion!
She was right. You're not very nice to know.
Frost watches her stagger off toward the station. Then he gets into his car. Nearby, he notices Cheryl Bartlett meeting Fletcher. She turns away from his welcoming kiss as Frost observes. Back in the station, Gilmore brings him a mug of tea.
There you go, Governor.
Frost stares out the window at the rain.
There's a bit coming through. Not a lot, though. Right. Mr. and Mrs. George Compton. Married 6 years. Lived in London, North One. Bought a farmhouse 3 years ago. Spent a fortune having it done up, including about $10,000 on the sprinkler and alarm system. Part of the local smart set, naturally. He's not particularly well-liked, but no sniffers yet of anything malignant. General opinion seems to be that he's got a quick temper and she's something of a teaser. Quite a combination, I would have thought. They stayed 2 nights at the White Tower Hotel in Knightsbridge on January the 8th and 9th. Now that ties in with the book fair at the Grosvenor and the time she said she met the bloke. On September the 23rd, 1989, he was up before the beat for thumping of Mr. Jeremy Medwin. Fifthorpe is opening a bound over to keep the peace, and that's it for the minute.
Are you a close family? I don't just mean your wife and kids. I mean, you know, the rest, your mother and father and so on. Do you keep in touch, or is it just birthdays and Christmas time?
No, we're very close. Both Anne and I are from large families. And you know what they're like, in and out of each other's pocket all the time. Sometimes too much, I would have thought. But, on the other hand, you always know where to go when you're in trouble. Mind you, that's what families are all about, isn't it? I remember one time...
Yes, all right, you made your point.
Frost looks at Gilmore to answer.
Hello? No, Gilmore. Oh, yes, good morning to you too. Renzi. I most certainly have. Fire away.
Frost kicks the radiator.
Yeah? Yeah. Thank you very much. Right, there's nothing on the bag or the bike, but they've had the two newspapers under the microscope. There's nothing on the Independent, but on the Sun, there are traces of black paint and rust along the tear. Match that, and we're in business.
At the Hamilton's cottage, Frost accosts a forensics technician.
All right, come on, get on with it. The place is empty.
I'm not working with that thing trying to claw me to death.
Yes, all right.
Frost steps around to a window. His cat impersonation distracts the dog.
Go on, get on with it!
The bespectacled technician carefully scrapes a paint sample from the mail slot.
The spectrograph analysis of the sample taken from the newspaper showed three layers of paint. The bottom one was brown, the middle one was a grey undercoat, and the top one was black. Now, the analysis of the sample taken from Hamilton's letterbox showed three identical layers. Same colour, same composition.
Mullet shrugs.
But I don't see the problem. We now have scientific proof that the newspaper was put through the Hamilton letterbox.
Yes, but the problem is that we can't prove that it was either of them that pulled it out again. I mean, if the ninhydrin tests had come up with a decent set of prints, that would have been different. But as it stands, it means anyone could have taken that paper out.
But why would they? Who else would want to make it appear that the girl never got as far as the Hamilton's house? And that's the one and only reason for those newspapers to be left in that bag. To make us believe...
Yes, I'm not that slow, thank you very much, sir.
I want the Hamiltons brought in for further questioning.
They enter Mullet's office.
I see, sir.
Obviously, you have other ideas.
You're the executive in control, sir, if that's what you want.
That's what I want, Inspector.
Then you'll want a thorough search of the house for backup evidence to show that the girl was there.
Of course.
And as the Hamiltons are out of the house and we don't know what time they're going to be back, you'll be authorising a sledgehammer through the front door and a bullet through the dog's head, will you, sir? Only I only say this in view of the trouble we had last month when you authorised...
Have the house kept under surveillance, and as soon as the Hamiltons return, we'll move in.
Thank you very much, sir.
Frost steps out and smiles to himself.
Oh, sir. Yeah. Forensic need to speak to you. There's been a bit of a cock-up.
He finds the forensics technician in the crime room.
What it boils down to is that the paint sample findings might not be as conclusive as we thought. The tests were fine as far as they went, but what we should have done, I should have done, was to have tested other letterboxes on the girl's delivery route. This I've now done.
And?
And several of the letterboxes came up with identical spectrograph readings.
Oh, terrific.
How the hell does that come about?
It seems some of the properties in that area are owned by the same landlord. Every 4 years, the exteriors are repainted. Standard colours. Standard specification.
So what you're saying is that the girl herself could have pushed that newspaper in any one of those letterboxes by mistake and then pulled it out again?
I'm saying... it doesn't have to be the Hamilton place, yes. I'm very sorry not to have told you this earlier. If you'd like me to explain it to Mr. Mullet.
Frost steps over, glaring in his face.
How kind of you, young man. Please be my guest.
Near Bell's house, Frost and Gilmore are on a stakeout.
Did you ever see that film, High Society? Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, Grace Kelly. No, Now, that was a really nice film, that. Good story, nice songs.
Shut up.
Sorry, Gov.
They watch a station wagon turn into the driveway of the house.
My money's still on Colin Fletcher.
Mine's on Bell. I'm interviewing him about the murder of a 15-year-old girl he knows, and it's like I'm trying to sell him double glazing. It's all matter of fact. No emotion. Nothing.
Well, his wife's just died. It's a very difficult time for him. I mean, blimey, if anything happened to my wife, I don't know what I'd do, how I'd behave. There's no way of telling, is there? Some people rant and rave. Some people just tamp it down inside them. Just no way of telling.
Maybe.
Bell opens his front door.
Oh. Inspector, please come in.
Thank you.
Do you mind coming into the kitchen?
No, not at all, sir.
It's warm in here. I haven't got the heating on in the rest of the house. It doesn't seem a great deal of point. Please sit down. I'm sorry about this. I've been going through some of my wife's things.
You as well, eh?
Sorry?
Not the happiest of pastimes.
No. No, it's not. Can I offer you some coffee or something?
No, no, thank you, sir. No, it's just a quick visit. We found the girl's bicycle.
I was wondering what happened to that.
It was thrown in a ditch between here and town. Little kid had nicked it.
I see.
It was between the little Haysham turn off and the crossroads. I was wondering if you'd seen a car or something parked there on your way in and out of town.
No, I don't think so.
No, it was a bit of a long shot. I'm just asking everyone who lives out this way. You never know.
Excuse me.
Yes.
92189.
Alone in the kitchen, Frost proceeds to prowl around.
Fine, how are you? Yes, I'm just going through.
He notices the microwave.
Yes, it is. It has to be done, so.
It prompts him to step over to the refrigerator. In the freezer compartment, he finds some frozen dinners. Yes. Closing the freezer door, he steps away from it.
Sorry about that. Is there anything else I can help you with, Inspector?
No. Thank you, sir. When you gave the girl a lift to school, what did you do with her bike?
It went in the back of my car. I have an estate.
Of course you do. Thank you, sir.
Gilmore's waiting for him outside.
You only got it tying parcels.
Me? Hopefully.
So am I. My wife used to wrap all the Christmas presents and so on. She enjoyed it. Me, if I tied a parcel, it ended up like an unmade bed. Blow some of that smoke in my face, will you? I'm getting the pains.
Naughty, naughty.
Back at the station, a detective carries a tray of takeout food up to Superintendent Mullet's office, which is dark, except for the glow from the heater.
Oh, here we go. About bloody time, too.
I'm not too sure I like this.
Well, don't eat it, then.
I mean us in here. Now, what if Laughing Boy finds out?
Don't you worry, he won't find out. Who ordered the vindaloo?
Me.
Your deal. Chips. Anyway, if the heating had been on, we wouldn't need to be in here, would we?
Right, OK. Where was I?
Mr. Bell. My money's still on Fletcher.
No, no. Concentrate on Bell. Thank you. He's at his wife's funeral, right? And it starts to pour with rain. Now, he's got a grandstand view of the plumber tweaking the lock and breaking into the crypt. Later on, he needs somewhere to hide the kid's body. Now, who'd think of looking in a place like that? If it hadn't been for those spaced-out hippies, would we?
But he didn't even meet the girl in the morning.
No, I know, not in the morning. Don't forget the post-mortem showed that the girl didn't die until the afternoon.
What are you saying? He went to his wife's funeral, then met the girl and killed her?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
It's a bit strong, isn't it, Gov? What was your motive?
And where's your proof?
I don't know where he killed her, but I think I know why he killed her.
And that completes the case for the prosecution, Your Honour.
Yes, all right. Thank you very much. All right.
The duty sergeant looks in.
I don't believe what I'm seeing.
You've got to believe it, Johnny, otherwise why are we put on this earth?
You'll go ape shit.
Oh, well, don't just stand there. Pop out and get us another six-pack, will you? There's a good fellow.
You just had a call from Mrs. Compton. There's an intruder in the place, and her old man's gone after him. I've got a car on its way.
The detectives scramble. The Compton's farmhouse is a blazing inferno. By the time Frost and Gilmore arrive, firefighters can do little to quell the roaring flames.
Inspector! Over here!
Frost steps over to a constable who stands beside a body in a plastic sheet.
I found him inside. Burnt you well.
Frost kneels down and pulls back the sheet, revealing the burned face of George Compton.
Poor bastard.
I presume he's the asshole, though.
It's Compton, all right.
What's left of him? Oh, let's get away from here. All right, come on then, tell me what happened.
The place was well alight when we got here. We radioed for the fire brigade and had a look round and found Mrs. Compton.
You went in there?
God, no. She was round her back in her nightdress on the lawn, unconscious.
Right, where is she now?
Someone in the village.
What happened to the sprinklers?
The water supply was turned off at the mains.
Right, get in touch with the hospital, doctors, chemists. Anyone requiring treatment for burns, we want to know about it.
Yeah, all ready in hand, sir. The control's got all the cars keeping an eye out for anyone suspicious.
Well done, son. You too shall have a sweetie. Oh, right.
Frost joins the fire chief.
Hi, Jack.
Hi.
It's better to see you here.
No, and he came out to keep warm. Come on, then. What do you reckon?
Petrol. It's all over the place.
Frost finds Alex Compton at her neighbor's.
We went to bed just after 10. George had had an early start this morning. I woke up suddenly. I don't know why. And he was standing by the window. He said that there was someone outside and that he was going down to take a look. I was to telephone the police. I asked him not to. But he said he was going to teach whoever it was a lesson. I was to stay in the bedroom and lock the door. I waited. And then I heard shouting and things being knocked over as though they were fighting. And then it all went quiet again. And I don't know why, but something made me open the bedroom door and there was smoke coming up the stairs. And I could hardly see. And I got downstairs and all the time I was calling out for George, but he didn't answer. And I got to the door and out into the garden. I could hardly breathe. And I was calling out for George. And I went round the side of the house and looked in. And he was lying there by the table. I called out to him, but he couldn't hear me. And then I was screaming and screaming. And then nothing.
Frost watches her.
I should have made him wait for the police. I should have stopped him.
She breaks down. Frost glances toward the neighbor.
No more. She's had enough.
Although it's only a matter of some 3 days since the girl's body was discovered in the church crypt,
Frost listens to Mullet's radio interview as he shaves.
This appalling crime to justice, and I can assure your listeners that an arrest will be made very shortly.
Oh, yeah.
Emerging from a jewelry store, Frost finds a meter maid writing him a ticket. He arrives at his office, ticket in hand. He tosses the ticket in a desk drawer with a number of others. Then he gives the radiator a ritual kick. Wrapping his coat around him against the chill, he sits down at his desk. He pulls a little packet from his coat pocket and considers it. At the tap on his door, he pockets the packet. The desk sergeant steps in.
Thought you'd like to know, Arthur Anlin and Tony Price will definitely be in on Monday.
Whoopee.
Well, don't say we don't keep you informed.
Bill, organise me a search warrant, will you?
Bell opens his door.
Good morning, sir. I've a warrant to search your premises in connection with the death of Paula Bartlett.
Excuse me, sir.
Frost leads a team of detectives inside. Splitting up, they proceed to search the house in depth. Bell looks on. Finally, Gilmore joins Frost in the kitchen.
Well?
Nothing. But then what do you expect?
You never know, Sergeant. You just never know.
Frost finds Bell.
I wonder if you'd be good enough to unlock your car, sir.
Bell unlocks the station wagon.
And the boot, please, sir.
Bell hesitates. But then, reluctantly, he steps around to the back of the car. And opens the hatch.
Excuse me, please, sir.
Frost stares at Bell as Gilmore climbs into the rear compartment and searches it. Finding nothing, Gilmore climbs out and starts to close the hatch.
Wait a minute. What's that?
Frost climbs into the rear compartment.
Come and have a look at this, will you, sir?
Pulling a pen from his pocket, he uses it to pick up a silver charm which he shows to Bell.
She was very proud of her little charm bracelet. Her father gave it to her. Perhaps you can explain how it came to be in the back of your car.
Back in the house, Frost stares out a window while Bell sits at the kitchen table behind him.
Watch someone slowly dying day after day, night after night, with the smell of death in every corner of the house. And there comes a time when you die a bit yourself. And you get frightened. You get lonely. And you need some sort of reassurance that you're still alive. That the juices are still flowing. That the old man on the white horse still hasn't quite got his hands on you yet. In my case, it was work. It still is. Damn all else, to be honest. In your case, it was a 15-year-old schoolgirl offering herself to you because, as luck would have it, she was in need of some sort of reassurance herself.
He turns around to face Bell.
That's what happened, isn't it? And if I'd been in your shoes, you can say. You don't know, do you? You just don't know.
Bell's chin trembles. He looks despairingly at Frost.
When I came back after the funeral, she was here in the kitchen. She'd let herself in the back door. We keep a key in the shed. I suppose I must have mentioned it to her at some time. I asked her what she was doing here. And she said she'd had a row with her parents and she didn't want to go to school and just wanted someone to talk to. She was very upset and so I let her stay. I suppose... I didn't want to be alone either. She was starving. So I gave her something out of the deep freeze and we sat here and talked. And she told me about Colin, her stepfather, and how she hated him. and how she couldn't bear the idea of him in bed with her mother, and how she wanted to punish them, and why shouldn't she have someone in her life too, and she began to cry. And I put my arms around her, just to comfort her, and she was kissing me, and I wanted to stop her. I should have stopped her. It was her first time, and afterwards, I was so ashamed. I was horrified at what I'd done. But she was dancing around, laughing. She was in a kind of hysteria, and she said she was going to stay here and look after me. And then she went to the dressing table and started to put on my wife's lipstick. Look, she said, I'm just like her, I'm a woman, doesn't matter what they say, I'm a woman. And she lay there on the bed naked with this lipstick all over her face. It was grotesque, and I told her it was wrong, and that she must never tell anyone. And suddenly, she was screaming and shouting that it was all my fault, and that I'd told her to come here, and that Colin could prove it. He'd heard her on the telephone. She'd pretended to make a phone call to him to upset him, just to annoy him. And she was banging on the window and shouting that I'd attacked her. And I pulled her away. And she was kicking and struggling. And all I wanted to do was stop her shouting. And I put my hands around her neck. And I didn't mean to kill her. As God is my witness, I didn't mean to kill her.
Frost steps a little closer to him.
And that night, you drove her to the cemetery. And on your way, you noticed a paper sticking out of the Hamilton's letterbox. And you realized if you could get rid of the bike and the two newspapers, it would look as though she'd never reached this house.
Yes.
Very clever thinking, sir, under the circumstances.
It was an accident, and I'll live with it for the rest of my life.
So will her parents, sir. I wouldn't wonder.
His cheeks wet with tears, Belle looks up at Frost. Later, Frost sits with Cheryl Bartlett.
It's all ifs, isn't it? If we hadn't had a row that night, Colin hadn't joined that angling club, if it hadn't come on to rain when it did. It's all ifs.
What time will Mr. Fletcher be back? I'd like to have a word with him. Gave him something of a hard time.
He won't be back. He's gone. It would never have worked out. Not in the long run. I never did trust him. Not properly. Maybe if I'd never met him. There you go, you see. Another one of them ifs.
She smiles unhappily. Detective Sergeant Gilmore looks up as Frost returns to the office. He shows Frost a small plastic evidence bag.
I just thought I'd double check. 15 little silver charms. One for each birthday. All present are correct.
And a fact.
That is a fact.
Oh, well. I wonder where that other one came from, then.
You took one hell of a chance there, Governor.
Is Mrs. Compton here?
Yeah, she's downstairs.
Good.
Because I'm just about to take another one.
Frost enters an interview room.
Mrs. Compton, thank you very much for coming in. I'm sorry to have kept you waiting. The thing is, we've had a terrific stroke of luck. Now, this bloke that's been threatening you, Lawrence something, I think you said his name was?
Yes.
Yes, Lawrence Tidyman. We got him, picked him up last night. Not only have we got him, he's confessed to everything. The lot, meeting you, threatening you, going to the house last night. All we need for you to do is to make a positive identification. Do you think you can do that for me?
Well, I'm not sure.
It's all right. Don't be afraid. He can't do anyone any harm.
Frost pulls the sheet back from the middle-aged man's body. Alex looks down at it and nods.
You're saying this is the man, Lawrence Tidyman?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes, yes, this is him.
That's funny, Sergeant. We've got him down as... What was his name again?
Zoltan Pimaniski. He died in a road accident last night at 9 o'clock. He was over here from Hungary visiting his sister. She's just identified him. Oh, and he didn't speak a word of English.
Back in the interview room.
Tell a very good story, Mrs. Compton. A bit too good for my taste. A bit too smooth. You know what us common folk are like. Give us a drop of caviar and we're yelling for the rock salmon. I went to visit the bank the other day. Bank manager there owes me a favour. Do you know what he did? He left your husband's file on the desk while he went outside to play with his abacus. And him knowing what a nosy bugger I am. Your husband was up to his ears in debt. The house is in hock to the bank. You've got creditors galore. And the business took a nosedive 15 months ago with no chance of recovery. And my bank manager, my friendly bank manager, he's a bit of a cynic, you know. You know what he said? He said the only way to save the family bacon would be to have a nice little insurance policy and a bloody big fire. We've had the bloody big fire. What about the insurance?
I know nothing about the financial side of the business. George took care of all that.
Then let me enlighten you.
He checks a file.
The house and contents are insured for £750,000. Your husband also carried two hefty life insurances. You're a very lucky woman, Mrs. Compton. Mind you, the way I understand it, most of the money he lost was yours, him being long on the charm and short on the readies. Must have been very unnerving for you.
Do you think I give a damn about the money?
Quite frankly, my dear, I don't think that you give a damn about anything else.
She stares at him.
A providential fire, business on the rocks, sprinkler system turned off at the mains. No, no insurance company's going to pay out on that. So what do? You invent this imaginary weirdo who makes phone calls and sends you coffins. You even get us involved to add that bit of authenticity.
Turning his back on her, he puts his tea mug down on the radiator.
It was George's idea. I wanted nothing to do with it.
I believe you.
He turns to face her.
Or I would have done if I hadn't read the pathologist's report. Your husband suffered a severe blow to the back of the head. And, according to the pathologist, he was unconscious before the fire started. So now, apart from the imaginary Mr. Lawrence Tidyman, who else stood to gain the most by knocking your husband unconscious and leaving him to die in that fire? You think about it, Mrs. Compton.
Frost reports to Mullet.
Forensic are going over Bell's place now. They've already found evidence that the girl was there, some hair. Some fibres they're pretty certain will match the sweater she was wearing. It'll stand up, if that's what you're worried about, sir.
What about this woman, this Mrs. Whatever her name is?
Compton. Pronounced Compton. She'll cough, given time.
But the fact remains that in both cases you acted without a shred of concrete evidence.
That's right, I know they'd done it, and I knew we'd get the evidence. necessity being the mother of algae father.
One of these days you'll learn that to operate efficiently you need more than your well-known intuition.
I used more than my well-known intuition, sir. At least in one of the cases I did, I used my charm. It's a joke, sir. Don't bother to work it out.
Mullet frowns.
All right. Let me have both reports in writing.
Yes, sir.
Now, just a minute. Can you smell something?
What, sir?
Like curry?
Frost sniffs.
I think it's this fire, sir. Oh, yes. It's definitely the fire, sir. I'd switch it off if I were you.
He turns off Mullet's heater. He meets PC Wallace outside the interview room.
Well?
One, she only did it because she found out her husband was cheating on her. And two, she wants a solicitor.
Then she shall have one, Constable. Give her a cup of tea. In a nice cup.
Frost opens the door and looks in at Alex.
All right, Mrs. C.
You bastard.
He closes the door and smiles at Wallace.
But no sugar.
Frost strides off. This described version of A Touch of Frost, Knocked with Kindness, was created by Audiovision. The narrative description was written by Marco Soren, narrated by George Thompson, and produced by Jim DeMello, Ben Whaley, and Edgar Wong Baxter. To learn more about described video, visit www.audiovisioncanada.com. Cast: Detective Inspector Frost, David Jason, Superintendent Mullet, Bruce Alexander, D.S. Gilmore, Tony Hagler, Cheryl Bartlett, Diane Bull, Colin Fletcher, Charles Dale, Michael Bell, John Vine, Alex Compton, Amanda Elwes, George Compton, Dominic Jeffcott, Marion Annabelle Leventon, Jen Hamilton, Denise Black, Sean Hamilton, Steve Swinscott, Church Warden, Fred Pearson, Sergeant Wells, Paul Moriarty, Sergeant Johnson, Stuart Barron. Produced in association with Excelsior. Executive producers Vernon Lawrence, Richard Bates, Philip Burley. Copyright Yorkshire Television Limited, 1992. A Yorkshire Television production for ITV.